Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. Yeah, so this yesterday we left it off because we're in the second tetrad on feeling, and there was a short excerpt from Majjhima 14 on the theme that rapture and pleasure provided by jhana give discernment the support it needs to overcome sensuality entirely. And I thought I would read the whole sutta because it's a seminal sutta. And it's the the shorter discourse on the mass of suffering, the Chula Dukkha Kanda Sutta. Thus have I heard, on one occasion the Blessed One was living in the Sakyan country at Kapilavattu in Nigrodha's park. Then Mahanama the Sakyan, and that's the Buddha's cousin, I might go here just in case, and he's the brother of Anuruddha and Ananda, and he chose to remain a householder and let Anuruddha become a monk. Then Mahanama the Sakyan went to the Blessed One. After paying homage to him, he sat down at one side and said, "Venerable Sir, I have long understood the Dhamma taught by the Blessed One thus. Greed is an imperfection that defiles the mind. Hate is an imperfection that defiles the mind. Delusion is an imperfection that defiles the mind. Yet while I understand the Dhamma taught by the Blessed One thus, at times states of greed, hate, and delusion invade my mind and remain. I have wondered, Venerable Sir, what state is still unabandoned by me internally, owing to which at times these states of greed, hate, and delusion invade my mind and remain." So that might be of some interest to us. There. In the commentary, it says Mahanama had long ago attained the fruit of once-returner, which only weakens greed, hate, and delusion, but does not eradicate them. the commentary says that he had the mistaken notion that greed, hate, and delusion are eradicated by the path of once returner. He's a solid practitioner. Mahanama, there is still a state unabandoned by you internally, owing to which at times states of greed, hate, and delusion invade your mind and remain. For were that state already abandoned by you internally, you would not be living the home life. You would not be enjoying sensual pleasures. It is because that state is unabandoned by you internally that you are living the home life and enjoying sensual pleasures. Even though, and it's referring to sensual desire. Even though a noble disciple has seen clearly, as it actually is, with proper wisdom, that sensual pleasures provide little gratification, much suffering and despair, and that the danger in them is still more, as long as he still does not attain to the rapture and pleasure that are apart from sensual pleasures, apart from unwholesome states, or to something more peaceful than that, he may still be attracted to sensual pleasures. So that that's pointing to the jhanas and to the supramundane. States more peaceful than that are I would think. I mean, here the commentary says sort of higher jhanas, but I would think it's also, well, maybe not. Yeah, well, pointing to fruition of the path, but maybe not. But when a noble disciple has seen clearly, as it actually is, with proper wisdom, that sensual pleasures provide little gratification, much suffering and despair, and that the danger in them is still more, and he attains to the rapture and pleasure that are apart from sensual pleasures, apart from unwholesome states, or to something more peaceful than that, then he is no longer attracted to sensual pleasures. It's even the, say, the stream enterer and the once returner still have sensual desire and aversion, ill will. Certainly attenuated, but they're still there. Before my enlightenment, while I was still only an unenlightened bodhisattva, I too clearly saw, as it actually is with proper wisdom, how sensual pleasures provide little gratification, much suffering, and much despair, and how great is the danger in them. But as long as I still did not attain to the rapture and pleasure that are apart from sensual pleasures, apart from unwholesome states, or to something more peaceful than that, I recognized that I still could be attracted to sensual pleasures. But when I clearly saw, as it actually is, with proper wisdom, how sensual pleasures provide little gratification, much suffering, much despair, and how great is the danger in them, and I attained to the rapture and pleasure that are apart from sensual pleasures, apart from unwholesome states, or to something more peaceful than that, I recognized that I was no longer attracted to sensual pleasures. Refers to. And what is the gratification in the case of sensual pleasures? Because there are these five... this is the Sutta de Bhikkhus and this is the Mahanama. Mahanama, there are... text. Mahanama, there are these five chords of sensual pleasure. What are the five? Forms cognizable by the eye that are wished for, desired, agreeable, and likable, connected with sensual desire and provocative of lust. Sounds cognizable by the ear, odors cognizable by the nose, flavors cognizable by the tongue, tangibles cognizable by the body that are wished for, desired, agreeable, and likable, connected with sensual desire and provocative of lust. These are the five chords of sensual pleasure. Now, the pleasure and joy that arise dependent on these five chords of sensual pleasure are the gratification in the case of sensual pleasures. And what is the danger in the case of sensual pleasures? Here, on account of the craft by which a clansman makes a living, whether checking or accounting or calculating or farming or trading or husbandry or archery or the royal service or whatever craft it may be, he has to face cold, he has to face heat, he is injured by contact with gadflies, mosquitoes, wind, sun, and creeping things. He risks danger by hunger and thirst. Now this is the danger in the case of sensual pleasures, a mass of suffering, visible here and now, having sensual pleasures as its cause, sensual pleasures as its source, sensual pleasures as its basis, the cause being simply sensual pleasures. If no property comes to the clansman while he works and strives and makes an effort thus, he sorrows, grieves, and laments, he weeps, beating his breast, and becomes distraught, crying, "My work is in vain, my effort is fruitless." Now this too is a danger in the case of sensual pleasures, a mass of suffering, visible here and now, the cause being simply sensual pleasures. If property comes to the clansman while he works and strives and makes an effort thus, he experiences pain and grief in protecting it. How shall neither kings nor thieves make off with my property, nor fire burn it, nor water sweep it away, nor hateful heirs make off with it? And he guards and protects his property. Kings or thieves make off with it, or fire burns it, or water sweeps it away, or hateful heirs make off with it. And he sorrows, grieves, and laments. He weeps, beating his breast, and becomes distraught, crying, "What I had, I have no longer." Now this, too, is a danger in the case of sensual pleasures, a mass of suffering visible here and now, the cause being simply sensual pleasures. Again, with sensual pleasures as the cause, sensual pleasures as the source, sensual pleasures as the basis, the cause being simply sensual pleasures, kings quarrel with kings, nobles with nobles, Brahmins with Brahmins, householders with householders, mother quarrels with son, son with mother, father with son with father, brother quarrels with brother, brother with sister, sister with brother, friend with friend. And here, in their quarrels, brawls, and disputes, they attack each other with fists, clawed sticks, or knives, whereby they incur death or deadly suffering. Now this, too, is a danger in the case of sensual pleasures, a mass of suffering here and now, the cause being simply sensual pleasures. Again, with sensual pleasures as the cause, men take swords and shields and buckle on bows and quivers, and they charge into battle, massed in double array with arrows and spears flying and swords flashing, and there they are wounded by arrows and spears, and their heads are cut off by swords, whereby they incur death or deadly suffering. Now this, too, is a danger in the case of sensual pleasures, a mass of suffering, here and now, the cause being simply sensual pleasures. Again, with sensual pleasures as the cause, men take swords and shields and buckle on bows and quivers, and they charge slippery bastions with arrows and spears flying and swords flashing, and there they are wounded by arrows and spears and splashed with boiling liquids and crushed under heavy weights, and their heads are cut off by swords, whereby they incur death or deadly suffering. Now this too is a danger in the case of sensual pleasures, a mass of suffering here and now, the cause being simply pleasure, simply sensual pleasures. Again, with sensual pleasures as the cause, men break into houses, plunder wealth, commit burglary, ambush highways, seduce others' wives, and when they are caught, kings have many kinds of torture inflicted on them. The kings have them flogged with whips, beaten with canes, beaten with clubs. They have their hands cut off, their feet cut off, their hands and feet cut off, their ears cut off, their noses cut off, their ears and noses cut off. They have them subjected to the porridge pot, to the polished shell shave, to Rahu's mouth, to the fiery wreath, to the flaming hand. These are all tortures contemporary of the time of the Buddha. You get into the details, it's pretty gruesome. To Rahu's mouth, to the fiery wreath, to the flaming hand, to the blades of grass, to the bark dress, to the antelope, to the meat hooks, to the coins, to the lye pickling, to the pivoting pin, to the rolled up palliasse. I think it was to the coins as they cut out bits of skin with the size of coins until the person finally passes away. The pivoting pin, I think they put a stake through their ear and just twirl them around. And that's gruesome. Yeah. And they have them splashed with boiling oil, and they have them thrown to be devoured by dogs, and they have them impaled alive on stakes, and they have their heads cut off with swords, whereby they incur death or deadly suffering. Now this too is a danger in the case of sensual pleasures, a mass of suffering here and now, the cause being simply sensual pleasures. Again, with sensual pleasures as the cause, sensual pleasures as the source, sensual pleasures as the basis, the cause being simply sensual pleasures, people indulge in misconduct of body, speech, and mind. Having done so, on the dissolution of the body after death, they reappear in states of deprivation, in an unhappy destination, in perdition, even in hell. Now this is a danger in the case of sensual pleasures, a mass of suffering in the life to come. Having sensual pleasures as its cause, sensual pleasures as its source, sensual pleasures as its basis, the cause being simply sensual pleasures. Now, Mahanama, on one occasion I was living at Rajgaha on the mountain Vulture Peak. On that occasion, a number of Niguntas living on the Black Rock on the slopes of Isigili were practicing continuous standing, rejecting seats, and were experiencing painful, racking, piercing feelings due to exertion. Now, when it was evening, I rose from meditation and went to the Niguntas there. I asked them, "Friends, why do you practice continuous standing, rejecting seats, and experience painful, racking, piercing feelings due to exertion?" When this was said, they replied, "Friend, the Niguntanatha Buddha is omniscient, and all-seeing and claims to have complete knowledge and vision thus. Whether I am walking or standing or asleep or awake, knowledge and vision are continuously and uninterruptedly present to me. He says thus, Nigantas, you have done evil actions in the past. Exhaust them with the performance of piercing austerities. And when you are here and now restrained in body, speech, and mind, that is doing no evil actions for the future. So by annihilating with asceticism past actions and by doing no fresh actions, there will be no consequence in the future. With no consequence in the future, there is the destruction of action. With the destruction of action, there is the destruction of suffering. With the destruction of suffering, there is the destruction of feeling. With the destruction of feeling, all suffering will be exhausted. This is the doctrine we approve of and accept, and we are satisfied with it. When this was said, I told them, But friends, do you know that you existed in the past, and that it is not the case that you did not exist? No, friend. But friends, do you know that you did evil actions in the past and did not abstain from them? No, friend. But friends, do you know that you did such and such evil actions? No, friend. But friends, do you know that so much suffering has already been exhausted, or that so much suffering has still to be exhausted, or that when so much suffering has been exhausted, all suffering will have been exhausted? No, friend. But friends, do you know what the abandoning of unwholesome states is, and what the cultivation of wholesome states is here and now? No, friend. So, friends, it seems that you do not know that you existed in the past, and that it is not the case that you did not exist, or that you did evil actions in the past and did not abstain from them, or that you did such and such evil actions, or that so much suffering has already been exhausted, or that so much suffering has still to be exhausted, or that when so much suffering has been exhausted, all suffering will have been exhausted, or what the abandoning of unwholesome states is and what the cultivation of wholesome states is here and now. That being so, those who are murderers, bloody-handed evildoers in the world, when they are reborn among human beings, go forth into homelessness as Nigantas. Friend Gotama, pleasure is not to be gained through pleasure. Pleasure is to be gained through pain. For were pleasure to be gained through pleasure, then King Sainiya Bimbisara of Magadha would gain pleasure, since he abides in greater pleasure than the Venerable Gotama. Surely the Venerable Nigantas have uttered those words rashly and without reflection. Rather, it is I who ought to be asked, who abides in greater pleasure, King Sainiya Bimbisara of Magadha or the Venerable Gotama? Surely, friend Gotama, we uttered those words rashly and without reflection, but let that be. Now we ask the Venerable Gotama, who abides in greater pleasure, King Sainiya Bimbisara of Magadha or the Venerable Gotama? Then, friends, I shall ask you a question in return. Answer it as you like. What do you think, friends? Can King Sainiya Bimbisara of Magadha abide without moving his body or uttering a word, experiencing exclusively pleasure, for 7 days and nights? No, friend. Can King Sainiya Bimbisara of Magadha abide without moving his body or uttering a word, experiencing exclusively pleasure for 6, 5, 4, 3, or 2 days and nights, for 1 day and night? No, friend. But friends, I can abide without moving my body or uttering a word, experiencing exclusively pleasure for 1 day and one night, for 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 days and nights, for 7 days and nights. What do you think, friends? That being so, who dwells in greater pleasure, King Sainiya Bimbisara of Magadha or I? That being so, the Venerable Gotama abides in greater pleasure than King Sainiya Bimbisara of Magadha. That is what the Blessed One said. Mahanama the Sakyan was satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words. So the, there's a couple really important points to pull from this, and of course that's the that point of having that being able to direct the mind to a rapture and pleasure that are apart from sensual pleasures, apart from unwholesome states, or something more peaceful than that, so that there is not the pull to sensual pleasures. And that, and then you see that it's not a, it's like the Buddha giving that example in the end of, who's got more pleasure, King Sainya Bimbisara or myself, because he's relying on an internal pleasure and rapture, and in his case both due to access to jhanas as well as the liberation of the mind, freedom from all greed, hate and delusion. The other piece to come out of this is the that sense of rather than trying to wear off any karma in the past, one is which one then speculates about and has all sorts of stories about. One is focusing on the relinquishing of the unwholesome and developing the wholesome in the present as a means in terms of, if we're speaking about, say, purification, then it's still to this day, and you hear it even in Buddhist circles, somehow the sort of wearing off old karma as a whether one's experiencing some difficulty or one is putting forth effort or intention in a particular direction, then there's that an assumption of, if we can wear off this old karma, then somehow it's going to be good for the future. But that's a speculation. But what one can know is we can relinquish the unwholesome, the unskillful, the akusala, and develop the kusala, the skillful.
Or just the opposite, sometimes you hear said from people who say that, I'm this way because it's my karma, I don't have any.
Yes, this is tossing it all into the karmic pot, which is completely unknowable. Okay, any questions? Okay, so we'll continue here. So, Anguttara 7, Sutta number 63, in its simile of the frontier fortress, and we've read that before, compares the various levels of jhana to food for soldiers of right effort, and for the gatekeeper of right mindfulness. Only if the mind can experience a pleasure and a rapture not of the flesh, in other words, not connected with sensuality, will it have the nourishment it needs to keep itself protected. So that, and that's the that sutta of Anguttara 763, where the Buddha does give this frontier fortress and the things that it needs to protect itself, and so that this cultivation of the practices, all these different factors are giving the supports for this frontier fortress. And it is interesting. The Buddha relies in many cases on his warrior caste upbringing to give the illustrations. In step 5, the Pali word for rapture, piti, is related to the verb piviti, to drink. Several passages in the discourses describe rapture as the fruit, and that's where that's say step five. He trains himself. I will breathe in, sensitive to rapture, experiencing rapture. Trains himself. I will breathe out, sensitive or experiencing rapture, sensitive to rapture, experiencing rapture. Several passages in the discourses describe rapture as the food of the radiant devas, inhabitants of a Brahma world into which meditators can be reborn through mastery of the second jhana. Rapture thus carries connotations of refreshment and rejuvenation. In the standard similes for the four jhanas, rapture is symbolized by movement. The movement of water through the bathman's ball of bathing powder in the simile for the first jhana, and the natural movement of spring water throughout the lake in the simile for the second. Only in the third jhana, where rapture is absent, does the water of the lake fall still. Rapture can be felt both mentally and physically, a fact indicated by two passages from the discourses. The description of the seven factors for awakening in Majjhima 8.118 speaks of the meditator who has attained rapture as a factor of awakening as being enraptured in heart. The standard similes for the jhanas speak of the body as being permeated, pervaded, suffused, and filled with rapture when you're in the first and second jhanas. However, rapture is not a feeling. In other words, in and of itself, it is neither pleasant nor painful. Instead, it is more a quality of energy. None of the discourses describe the ways in which rapture may manifest, but later writings indicate that it can take many forms, some very gentle, others very intense, a thrill running through the body, or a wave washing over it. Some people find the resulting feeling of fullness pleasant. Others find it threatening. This is largely a matter of perception. A sensation that one person perceives as quenching a thirst, another may perceive as akin to drowning. This fact in itself is an excellent indication of why perception is listed as a factor fabricating the mind, and why experience in dealing with rapture gives insight into how to handle perception skillfully in step 7 and 8. That's a really important point in the sense of somehow you see the labeling as in piti. Well, who wouldn't? Well, that's, go for that. But then it's, you know, there's this whole realm of perception what we associate with it, and how the associations are made, how they're conditioned from the past, what we bring to it. So this is an active process of working with that in order to, in this second tetrad of calming those bodily fabric, the mental fabrications, these mental formations, calming the sanya and vedana, but relying on the more positive aspects of piti and sukha. The fact that the sensations accompanying rapture can become unpleasant explains why the third jhana, where rapture fades, is a more pleasant abiding than the second, and why the step of breath meditation aimed at pleasure is listed after the step aimed at rapture. And that's when Lumpa Cha describes that developing of the kind of refined and settled meditation and developing refined states. So that one is lets go of vitakka vichara because they're agitating, they start to be unpleasant as the mind is experiencing more piti and sukha, and so that the thinking becomes more gross and one is inclines to what is more refined. And then similarly, as the mind in the second jhana is experiencing piti and sukha, and then after a while the piti becomes tiresome and becomes a coarse, and one sheds that enters into the more stable quality of sukha and mindfulness. Training in rapture relates to several other steps of breathing meditation as well. Because rapture can be either physical or mental, some of the ways of inducing it will relate to how you adjust the breath in steps 3 and 4. Others will relate to exercises in step 10, gladdening the mind. The highest level of rapture, what Samyutta 36, Sutta number 31, calls rapture more not of the flesh than that not of the flesh, is the rapture felt by an arahant when reflecting on the fact that his or her mind is totally free from passion, aversion, and delusion. This would result from the successful completion of steps 12 to 16, there's aspects of Dhammanupassana. Any questions? Okay, sit quietly for a bit.